Welcome aboard the Story Ark. I'm your captain, Kenny Mears, and let's take a voyage together.
Some people keep pets like cats and dogs, and even chickens like we've explored in past episodes. But some people keep more unusual pets, like snakes. Today we have friend of the show, L. Aloysia Atkins, back on to talk about her experiences with snakes as pets. Now, to preface this, I just have to mention, when she came to the studio to record, she asked if she could bring her emotional support animal with her, which I, of course, obliged, figuring it was a little dog or something. Imagine my delight and surprise when she brings out her snake and drapes him around her neck. Here's what she has to say about Leopard and her other snakes.
Tell me about your snake.
My snake? This is Leopard. Leopard is actually my emotional support animal.
Oh, okay.
When I was 19, well, let's start over. Let's start with the beginning of the snake love. There's a story to everything, you know it. So when I was a child, I was terrified of snakes. I had nightmares about snakes. I still have nightmares about rattlesnakes. And my mother decided, she was raised in Jacksonville, Florida. So I tell people, my mama taught me to speak Southern way before she taught me to speak English. And I understand Southern. But she decided, because she'd been around, she got bit by a water moccasin one time. A lot of venomous snakes do not inject venom randomly. If they don't feel threatened, they're not going to inject anything. If they're not trying to kill you, they're not going to inject anything. So she got bit by a water moccasin while she was swimming in the river, and it didn't inject any venom. So she never had a problem. She told me the story of going out. Her daddy drove a laundry truck. So their driveway was extra wide for the laundry truck. And she and her mama and her sister walked out to go to the grocery store one day, and there was an eastern diamondback rattlesnake that was stretched completely across the driveway, which puts it at about a 12-foot snake. And she said, we walked out, we walked over it, we went to the store, and when we came back, it was gone. So she, even though she'd been, you know, grown up around all these venomous snakes, she had no fear of snakes. And here I am, terrified of snakes. Well, she gets talking to one of her friends and finds out that her friend's neighbors, a group of college boys, had found a rosy boa up Logan Canyon. And they had caught it and taken it home because it was obvious that somebody had had it as a pet. And they just took it home to take care of it. A rosy boa isn't going to survive in this kind of a climate. And so she takes me, I was probably 7 years old. My mom takes me over to her friend's house. They lived in this apartment complex. And she and her friend and I go to this apartment where these guys lived with this rosy boa. And I'm inside the building thinking, you know, I'm in their apartment thinking that they're going to go to an enclosure and take it out. And they're looking under the couch and they're checking up on the shelves and they're looking through the whole house. And I'm like frozen. I am petrified. I am terrified. There is a snake loose in my environment and I'm sure it's going to kill me. And they found it. They finally reached up on a shelf and it was behind some books or something. They pull it down and they hand it to my mom and she's holding it. And she's like, here, touch it. I was like, nope, not happening. And she says, no, touch it. I said, nope, not happening. She says, it's not going to feel like you expect it to feel. I don't care. Not happening. I'm terrified. I mean, I am ready to cry. I'm so scared. She says, look, I have the head here. Touch the tail. It can't bite you. And she's letting this thing crawl all over. And I'm thinking she's going to die. And so finally I reached up and I petted the tail, and it didn't feel at all like I'd expected it. You know, people talk about snakes being slimy and horrible, and they're really not. They're very dry and soft. So I went, okay, so it doesn't feel like I expect it to feel. Got it. Well, then when I was about 19, for some reason, I had decided I wanted to become a herpetologist. Probably because I was no longer afraid of snakes, and so I thought they were kind of cool. And my first snake was about a 6-foot-long Burmese python. And leopard is about 5 feet long, but he's a ball python, so he's smaller around. My Burmese was probably, I mean, she was pretty hefty. She got out of her bag one time. We had to tear the whole back seat out of the car because she'd wrapped herself all through the springs in the back seat. And we fed her giant mice. And we would go get frozen chicks because at chicken farms, they would kill the roosters that were born and freeze them. And then you could go get them and thaw them out and feed them, use them for snake food. And I loved her. I took her everywhere. And I discovered that you could put her in a sack and stick her in the middle of the table when you were at a restaurant. Nobody knew that that's what was in that sack. She went everywhere with me. I mean, she went everywhere. And she was huge. And then I had my picture taken. I was in a taffeta and lace formal. And there was a photo studio across from a pet store in the old Emporium in Logan. And I went over and asked if I could borrow their Burmese, and they let me take their 12-foot Burmese python, wrapped it around me. And I had pictures taken of me in this formal holding this 12-foot Burmese that weighed more than I did. And then I had to give that one back. I couldn't. And Miranda, you know, we had her, had custom built her an enclosure. And then I wanted to get another snake, and I chose the clown of the snake world. I got a wild-caught eastern hognose snake. Now, hognose are called hognose for a reason. They have this little snout that kind of points up. They hood up like a cobra. Charlie was about 1.5 feet long. And because Charlie was wild caught, Charlie would do what hognose snakes do. So we would take Charlie out. We would put Charlie on newspaper. This is significant. You have to do it on something you can throw away. Because what hognose snakes do is if you start to annoy them, they sit up, they hood up, they open their mouths, and they start to hiss. And wherever you move, they move. But they know you're bigger than they are, and they don't want to hurt you because you could kill them. So they're just trying to intimidate you. The thing with Charlie was when she was tired of being intimidated or intimidating, she goes into survival mode, rolls over and plays dead. And when I say she would roll over and play dead, she would roll over, tongue hanging out the side of her mouth, writhing around like it was the most painful death throes ever. Then she'd be still, tongue still hanging out of her mouth, and she would musk, and it stunk to high heaven, which is why you always did it on newspaper or something you could clean up and throw away. So then we'd take her in, we'd put her under the faucet and give her a bath because nasty smelling. She would come to life. As long as she was under the water, she was squirming around and she was like, I'm the happiest snake in the world. I'm loving this. And as soon as the water would go off, she'd go limp, tongue out of the side of her mouth again. And I absolutely loved her. But She was staying at my boyfriend's friend's house, and I broke up with my boyfriend, and he had Charlie. He sold Charlie and had Miranda put to sleep. And I hope he gets everything he deserves for that. And for years after that, I had small children. I know that technically, until a snake's over 10 feet, the average human can handle a constrictor without a problem. But I had little kids. We did have a bull snake for a little while named Mr. S. My kids would grab him by the tail and take him for a walk. And if they let go of his tail, all he'd do is curl up. And then when you go to grab him, he'd hiss at you and then just pick him up. And he was fine. It was really funny. And so I never taught them to be afraid of snakes. They always were around them from the time they were little. I never wanted to own one. Plus a Burmese, I had learned. Burmese pythons are beautiful. They're beautiful animals. But they grow to be about 17 to 20 feet long, which is bigger than the 10-foot normal adult length, you know, that a normal adult could handle. And it's so unfair to the animal to make them stay in a little enclosure when they're that big. I mean, even the zoos have enough space that they can move around, but even that's awfully small for a snake that size. So I didn't want to go for another Burmese, and I wasn't sure what I wanted to do. And about 6 years ago, I had a friend who got a ball python, a baby ball python, and took it home. But then he wanted to go on vacation. And he's like, I need someone to watch my snake. And I said, I'll watch your snake. I love snakes. So I took his snake to my house. And she was, like I said, she was just a baby. And he'd been feeding her frozen thaw. And I just couldn't do it. I was like, this is so disgusting, thawing out little baby mice and rats and feeding them to us. It was just no. And so I sent him a message and said, do you mind if I feed Gemma live? He said, no, go ahead. So I found someone I could get some little mice from. Well, Gemma was used to frozen thaw, and you have to take them in tweezers and move them around so they think they're alive, and then she'd go after it. I dropped this tiny little mouse in with her. And the mouse is running around doing its little mouse thing. And Gemma is laying in her hide with her head over the edge, just minding her own business. Hello, I'm cute. You know, I'm a cute baby snake. And little mouse and Gemma come nose to nose. Gemma jumps back into her hide. Little mouse rushes to the other side of the enclosure. They were both terrified. It was about hysterical. And then Gemma all of a sudden went, wait, that smelled like food. And she comes out and she curls up. And I mean, she's just teeny tiny. She curls up. She wasn't going to hunt it. She was waiting. And sure enough, it took some time, but that little mouse came back over. The next morning, there was no little mouse in the enclosure anymore. And after that, I'd go get Gemma a mouse once every week or two. And it got to where she saw me bring the white box, and I would open the lid to the box and put it down in the cage. And before I could pull the mouse out, she would jump in, grab it, have it wrapped. Once she figured out that mice were food, she was so happy. And so she loves her food. Well, I got so used to having her around, and he'd go on vacation, and then I'd have to take her and her enclosure back. And I got looking at KSL classifieds, and I went, oh, I need a snake. I just need one of my own. And I found one. He was advertised as Monty the Python. And I went, that's so cliche. So I named him Drew. And I took Drew home. Unfortunately, I still don't know what happened with Drew. He had a lovely enclosure. He was doing very well. I went in one morning to pull him out and he was dead. And I was heartbroken. And I thought, I can't lose another snake. It just must not be the right time. And it was my son's birthday. My son loved that snake. I mean, it was just devastating. So I wasn't going to get another snake. And one day I was browsing on KSL Classifieds and Leopard showed up. And Leopard was with a family that had little kids. They had pictures of him, the little kids playing with him. I knew he was well socialized. And I told my son about him. And my son said, "Let me buy him for you, Mom." And brought me down here. And that's how I ended up with Leopard. Well, Leopard, the lady looked at me and she said, "I don't want to sell him." She says, "I don't know why I felt like I needed to sell him. Because I don't want to sell him. I love him." And we got there and I went in. And I picked him up and he wrapped around me and she said, "You're why I needed to sell him." She said, "I can tell he needs to be with you and you need him right now." And he, I call him my emotional support animal. If you watch him, if I start to get upset, he will start to get very agitated. And there was one day that I take him with me when I go to therapy. I mean, I take him to the doctor's office. I take him to therapy with me. And there's one day I was at therapy and he was just laying down my back and we were dealing with some pretty traumatic events. And I started to get upset and all of a sudden I can feel Leopard just start rubbing on my back. And then he comes up. And at that point, I wasn't wearing glasses. And he comes across my face. He wipes away my tears. And then he hooks himself over my ear and looks at my therapist like, "Just what do you think you're doing?" And we just laughed because he was going to make sure I was okay. The first time I had COVID, because snakes' respiratory systems are very sensitive, I didn't dare go near him. When I finally took him out of his enclosure and was holding him after I had COVID, he checked my legs, he checked my arms, he checked my face. I mean, he made sure I was okay. And then he calmed right down and just curled up and went to sleep. So that's, I haven't been able to take him for a while, a lot of places. So whenever I get the chance, I just take him with me. Because he really is fairly well behaved. Sometimes he wants to go exploring when it's not safe, and we have to have a discussion about that. But I can, like, if I I put him in his backpack because I wasn't sure how he'd do in here. Or, well, not how he'd do, but how you would do with him. And so, and when I opened up his backpack, he crawled right in. He curled up. He was fine. So we go a lot of places together without people knowing. I've taken him to work with me and people have no idea that I took him to class. I started back to USU last fall and I took him to class a couple times and people had no idea that I had him with me because I'd put my hoodie on and he would be curled up under my hoodie. And then after class, I'd take him out to show somebody and they'd like, "You have a snake." Yeah. He was here for all of class. So I actually, with my master's degree, I'm hoping to go into therapy and I've actually worked with people that have phobias of snakes with him. And little Gemma, her owner decided at one point that he didn't necessarily want to keep her anymore. And he knew I'd taken care of her and that I knew how to take care of her. So I actually have Gemma at home. I just don't very often, especially when it's a long drive, I don't take both of them. Sometimes I'll take both of them. Their enclosures are next door to each other. Most of the time, Leopard stays around my neck and Gemma stays around my wrist. They've never met each other. So they're both ball pythons. He's got a special gene. So in the sunlight, his dark patches iridesce. He's really pretty in the sun. So, and very friendly. Never a problem. So I had him around my neck one day and I went into this antique store in Logan. And I'd been looking around and looking around and there were two older ladies in there. And one of them comes up to me and she says, "Oh, look at her scarf," and reaches up and touches it and jumps back. And she says, "That's really a snake." I said, "Yeah." She says, "I'm terrified of snakes." I said, "Not anymore. You're not." And by the time I left, they were both petting him. And so he's very curious right now. He's like, "What is this? I want to talk. Do you want to talk? Say hello. You're going to smell it." But, you know, a lot of times they tell you, even with pets, that you should not touch their heads. And he'll let me pet his head. So will Gemma. So, yeah, that's why I have him with me today.
The Story Arc is a production of Food for Thought Audio. This episode was written, produced, and edited by me, Kenny Mears. We'd like to thank today's storyteller, L. Aloysia Adkins, for sharing her story. She is a member of the Utah Storytelling Guild. Be sure to check her and the Guild out at utahstorytellingguild.website. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, YouTube, or Instagram, or wherever you listen to podcasts for more content. And until next time, thanks for listening. Food, like life, can be complicated. That's why I'm on a quest to learn all about our food and the crimes, issues, and debates that are tied to it. I hope you'll join me on my quest to explore the dark side of dining.
There have been surveys out there that have shown that 8% of Americans think that chocolate milk comes from brown cows. There are a lot of people who don't know that chocolate actually comes from trees.
The colonists could not possibly obtain enough molasses from the British West Indies, which they were supposed to buy it all from. And so they resorted to smuggling channels to bring in illicit supplies of molasses from the French West Indies.
It's impossible to predict the risks for nanoparticles from their larger brethren. And so we can't just assume their safety based on testing that's done on particles.
I keep going back to this idea of companion. You know, if you break the word down, it's two Latin roots, con pane, you know, with bread. The idea being that once you break bread with someone, you can no longer be an enemy.
When people don't answer questions, that's where you dig, right? And most people won't answer or don't know how an animal got to their plate. Or they might have a vague idea, but if you dig, they don't have the full story.
There is one disrupting force that is slowly emerging that is likely going to change how we sell food to people, and that's the whole issue of GLP-1 drugs, weight loss drugs like Ozempic. It's really the quiet disruptor.
Tune in to The Dark Side of Dining every Thursday starting September 18th, available wherever you listen.